Some things shouldn't be transparent, like stop signs. But what you pay for should always be clear, like Hiller's True Transparency Pricing, always clearly itemized and never any hidden fees. Because you have the right to know what you're paying for. For more information, visit happyhiller.com/true-transparency-pricing. Happy you'll be, or the service is free.
Call the Happy Face Truck today.
We're pleased to be joined by our next in-studio guest.
You guys ready for just an amazing connection and a segue here to our next guest? I love calling my shot like this.
Call it.
Tying everything together. Chad Clifton's going to come on in 30 minutes. Okay.
Yep.
Chad Clifton played at Martin Westby. We've got a guy in our audience here from that neck of the woods. They were in 2A in high school at the time. Briarcrest was in 2A at the time. Chad Clifton lost twice in the state playoffs to a Briarcrest team whose offensive coordinator was Hugh Freeze. Stephen Godfrey from SB Nation, an Ole Miss grad, wrote an extensive piece on Ole Miss. Look how it all comes together. We're really uniting everything here.
I'm too impressed to be disgusted.
Yeah, that was good. I had to bring that one to
the forefront. 7 degrees
to
Stephen Godfrey.
I'm sitting here thinking, I didn't go to high school in Nashville. Where is this going?
Took a while for the circle to complete itself, but it did.
And that last turn.
Hugh Freeze, who was portrayed by... No, I'm not going to go to Kevin Bacon next in The Blind Side. The first question for you, is Hugh Freeze going to be a head coach again in college football?
Absolutely.
Okay.
Bobby Petrino's the head coach at Louisville.
That's a great point. When's it going to happen?
There's a good chance Urban Meyer will still be the head coach at Ohio State.
That's a fair point. We're going to get to that at some point, too.
Winning football games is usually a good way to stay a college football head coach.
How is the rehabilitation process going for Hugh Freeze right now?
Oh, it's non-existent at the moment.
But it's kind of on hold. Right.
Yeah.
Well, look, he's on a speaking circuit right now.
Well, that's part of the rehab tour.
If you have faith-based family issues or within your marriage, I don't even know what I just said, but that was what the ad copy was.
You memorized.
Yeah. You can go on a cruise for a substantial amount of money, you and your partner, and get counseled by Hugh Freeze and his wife.
Let me go call Teresa.
I'm not making this up.
So he went from...
Sweetheart, you want to go for a cruise?
The cruise aspect also just sounds dirty, regardless of what the subject matter is. Hey, sign up for this cruise. I'm going to be
so
going
he, on. He
I'm
went
a failed
from
football
nearly,
coach. I'm great at fixing your marriage.
He was nearly working for Nick Saban this season, and he went from there to now on the cruise ship.
I mean, I don't know what kind of cut he's getting off of the cruise. It may be a better deal. Because analysts...
Free room and board.
I mean, analysts at Bama,
the public,
I know how much they make. I'm just saying, if you do enough of these cruises, it may be more lucrative.
Yeah.
It's not the worst thing.
Yeah, no kidding.
Is Matt Luke the right guy, the right time right now for Ole Miss?
He was the right guy at the right time, definitely as an interim head coach. He was actually approached for an assistant job at South Carolina. He had been kicked around for kind of a Sun Belt head coaching job to sort of start his career, probably the way it should have been. And he was retained by Ole Miss a year ago specifically because they knew they were going to need an interim head coach, but they thought, well, it'll be more for the NCAA scandal. They didn't know the sex stuff was coming, so...
Yeah.
He's the guy for now. I think of all the new head coaches in the SEC, he's definitely the one who's going to have the most knowledge of the roster, institutional support because of everything they've gone through. And also, there's no expectation because they're under sanctions and they can't go to a bowl. So his situation is vastly different than any other coach in the league, for sure.
Let's look at Jeremy Pruitt at Tennessee. And you do this all the time. You cover college football nationally at SB Nation. When you look at the fit there with Jeremy Pruitt and what Tennessee needs right now, does it work? Does it line up with what needs to be done? And what do you think about Jeremy Pruitt in year one with that program inheriting those players?
Oh, man, it's a really hard question to answer. Of all the new hires in the league, maybe in all of the new hires, especially in the Power Five, he may be the hardest to judge because of how little we know about Saban assistants and the way that they come out of college and the fact that they're essentially, you know, behind the curtain for the entirety of their career. We didn't know a lot about Kirby Smart in terms of dynamic and personnel style and all that stuff because Nick keeps those guys behind closed doors. So given everything that's gone on at Tennessee, I strongly advise an expectation-free year zero. We like to use that in the industry now. We talk about year zero. Tennessee is probably the most ill...
But Jones like to talk about that, too.
Well, he may have had one more than one zero, but or a 0.5 or something. Of all the programs in the league, I think they're probably the least deserving of it in terms of the fan base because of how bad the past decade plus has been, and I get that. There's donor money issues. There's frustration. People who write checks want results 5 years ago. However, the frustrating thing about a new head coach is you've got to say, all right, let's stop. He's going to change everything fundamentally because that's what you wanted, and you pulled the trigger on this, so you're going to have to go into this year with zero expectation.
How did you view Shiano Sunday when it happened?
Shiano Sunday.
And now looking back with everything that's happened since then, it's added to the story with it. Do Tennessee fans get a little bit of validation for not wanting him when Ohio State passed him up for interim coach? How do you view the story now? Because with hindsight, we can look at everything completely differently.
Right. I think regardless of what happens, let's say that Pruitt is a terrible head coach. He never wins more than three or four games a season. I don't think that has anything to do with hiring or not hiring Greg Schiano. So in terms of validation, I think there's a lot of people in the industry who already know that Tennessee fans were completely validated in reacting the way in which that they did. I do not think that you tie the future or the win-loss record of Jeremy Pruitt to whether or not Greg Schiano would have been a good hire for the University of Tennessee, because many, many, many people who maybe weren't necessarily as vocal or as motivated to be vocal on that Schiano Sunday thought that this was a bad fit on multiple levels.
And you were one of them.
Absolutely.
I thought it was a bad fit.
Absolutely. I still don't see the fit. I don't get it. I think when you look at the guy's body of work, I'm not sure what exactly connects him to Tennessee in a way that puts him above other candidates. Now, I know this search was so unique, and we know so much about it, even more so. I think the average football fan knows more about the Tennessee head coaching search than any other search like it in the SEC or the Big Ten in the past 5-10 years because of the what came out after the fact, the text messages that were released. You know, the fact you changed ADs in the middle of the search, and of course the number of rejections. So it's an incredibly unique situation. But Schiano, in a vacuum, not a good hire.
Well, and Tennessee hired Mike Leach, it looked like. They had an agreement with Mike Leach to be the coach. Do you think that was the right fit for Tennessee?
That would have been a fit. I'll put it that way. It would have been a little bit of a square peg in a round hole. And objectively, sure, would have been fun to watch, more off the field than on. It's a great offense, but I think about after a year and a half of dealing with just the amount of, and this isn't a knock on Tennessee. The SEC is steeped in bureaucracy. There are heavy, heavy, heavy political stakes involved at every school, even Vanderbilt. And that's not meant to be a slight either. They're just a very unique apparatus. Right. Mike Leach is not going to put up with any of that. I mean, he's just not going to. There's a reason why the bulk of his coaching career, especially as a head coach, was in Lubbock, Texas and Pullman, Washington.
Stephen Godfrey, our guest, the one underrated element, I think, of Pruitt is his staff that he put together.
Absolutely. That's the benefit of the tree.
And whenever we discuss Schiano, we never discuss the coaches that would be coming with him. That's why I think Pruitt can be successful, is the staff that he starts with and the staff that he has compared to staffs across the conference.
I think it's the combination of, one, having the connections within the larger Saban tree, which is now a little bit wider and lengthier than people realize, and two, it is also having regional connections. Look, let's be honest about the University of Georgia. What's going on at Georgia right now is going to shift the way that we view the entire Southeastern Conference and therefore all of college football in terms of the playoff race and national champions, I think for at least the next decade. A lot of that, a majority of that, in my opinion, is not because Kirby Smart sat at the feet of the master for the better part of a decade. It's that he was incredibly well-trained, but he is a native son who evaluated the state of Georgia in a way that I don't know any. He did it in a way that was unique to him. He's the son of a high school football coach. He's connected in the state of Georgia as a recruiter, a lead recruiter, especially on defense, for Alabama all that time. I think that has a lot to do with the fact that why Jeremy Pruitt could be more successful than a candidate like Greg Schiano is that, you know, he may not know every back road in Nashville or Maryville or Memphis, but he knows this region and he knows how to evaluate and he knows connections. So when you talk about recruiting, player personnel, development, reaching out, JUCOs, if you're in the South, you're 2, 3, 4 steps ahead, regardless.
I'm seeing a lot of people high on Notre Dame right now.
Wow, okay. That's a choice.
I don't know how you can go into a season being high on Notre Dame at any point based on the schedule that
they
play.
You're Catholic. It starts with that.
It is that. I married a Catholic, and I didn't believe that until, you get around extended family, and they're like, oh, yeah, the Irish, they're going to win 9 this year. And I was
but
like,
the media also buy into it, it seems like.
A lot of Catholic media. it is an illusion program, definitely. Alabama has skewed so much in the last 15 years because it's a top program, the top program, and that you don't have to give them the benefit of the doubt. They always deliver. But we came in college sports from a culture where you gave that benefit of the doubt to those Notre Dames, Ohio States, Michigans, USC is a great example. USC kind of falling short of the national title a lot, right? And they're always, I always make a joke, you know, the West Coast media is as indifferent to the South as the South is to the West Coast when it comes to college football. USC is always propped up a little bit too high. But Notre Dame, you know, it goes back decades. It still permeates in the power circles in our sport. It's why they can survive and thrive without being in a conference. But no, in terms of prognostication, I think they will be good, but I do not think they're a national title conversation team. And also, the amount of turnover that he's had on his staff, that would make me hesitant to pick them to go deep.
Urban Meyer going to keep his job?
I have no idea. I'm going to be totally honest because I've never seen a scandal play out quite like this one. I thought that statement a week ago, what, at about 4 o'clock?
Yeah.
Of course, the classic 4 o'clock news dump on a Friday. It was unique.
What was funny was
it was amazing.
The Zach Smith interview happened at the same time. Like, it was all the 4 o'clock news dump. The live interview happened. And
strange
then
how that it's strange how that happens. I thought the statement was amazing. It positioned Meyer and his camp in such a way that I think it illustrates that they are not going away. I don't think that Urban Meyer is the kind of guy who's going to accept either a 4-game suspension or any kind of censure. I think he is a man who is really fallen in love with his own mystique. And I don't say that as I'm not a critic of Urban Meyer, but if you read his interviews and you listen to his, you know, you watch his televised interviews over the years, this is a guy who really believes what he sells, and I think that's probably why he got wrapped up in how he ended up on the top of this ivory tower, to be totally honest with you, because at right now, if we're litigating this in the court of public opinion, which is what we do, I don't see a way in which you can say he did not know about what was going on. I think now we have enough evidence to prove that. But what he's going to do now is push the attention towards Gene Smith, the athletic director, and get into a debate of policy and structure and legislation. It's going to go to state court. It may go bigger than that in terms of how you report Title IX infractions, how you report abuse. All of this, to me, spells that Ohio State will suffer in some capacity. What if he refuses to take a 4-game suspension? What if he appeals that? What do you do after that? This is a national title contending team right now. They are that talented. And now they have a massive distraction. And by the way, they play their first real game is, I think, week 2 or 3 against TCU.
Well, and they also, with that statement, he put the onus back on the university. I reported it. Yes. I did everything that I should. So now it's become the Ohio State University versus Urban Meyer.
And what's the next thing you saw after that? You saw fans take to the streets, go to the Shoe, right? And who did they argue on behalf of?
Urban Meyer.
Wasn't the victim. Wasn't the university.
No, it's not. Yeah.
It was Urban Meyer.
Well, and it's there's the report. I don't know if you read it. The Ohio State author who's tied to the university has this report with quotes from Zach Smith's mom and Courtney Smith's mom.
Right.
Both claiming that Courtney Smith had this plot to bring down Urban Meyer and Zach Smith for years. And both mothers, even her mother, saying, I've seen her multiple times screaming in his face, stopping him from getting out the door, and he would have to physically pick her up to move her from the door, and she'd have red marks and start taking pictures of it. And that the local cops got tired of her calling them all the time.
That's a hair that nobody a hair nobody wants to split.
There's still the issue of, okay, let's say everything the moms are saying is true about Courtney Smith. Well, there were still police reports. There's still some protocol that has to be followed where you report that to your boss and the boss reports that to Ohio State. So there's still somewhere where it wasn't completely taken care of by Ohio State.
Let's be totally cold and caustic and insensitive to whatever may have happened right now and not talk about the victim and not talk about the culture and not talk about the bigger issue that happens in America every day. Let's just talk about it.
Let's all agree we're against domestic violence. I think we can say everything.
But yeah. No, this is a sports show, and the majority of the questions I get are not about the nature of abuse in America and the power struggle that the gender dynamics. It's about, is this guy going to coach again? Even if she made it all up, which I do not believe at all, you knew about this for years. And also, how invaluable is a wide receivers coach? What am I missing here? I understand his family lineage. I get all that stuff. But you're going to mortgage your entire legacy? And Meyer was a guy who admired and understood and knew Paterno in a way that a lot of coaches didn't. He watched that happen. He should have known better. Even if it's all fabrication, you need to isolate and expunge that. And that's just that's the cold, caustic side of, hey, regardless of who's fighting who hit who, get rid of it. Get it out of your program. That's the least you could have done.
He also could have hired a better wide receivers coach. I mean, if we're looking at the cold
others.
Part of this,
yeah.
There's plenty of guys you could have hired at Ohio State that's even better than Zach Smith.
Yes.
One phone call could have done
it. The Ohio State tree, what's interesting about that, and that's why I was asking Paul during the break about Vrabel, like the Ohio State tree and the Meyer tree now leans into the NFL, and then because of that, can also pull from the NFL. There are a lot of great coaches on that tree.
What can this do for Ryan Day?
You know, I think about what Luke Fickell navigated this a couple years ago. And I think Luke Fickell was a company man. It was a different time. Obviously, he's at Cincinnati right now. He's a guy I think you should watch in the next couple of years. And I really think he will do a great job at Cincinnati. They're in a roster situation right now, so you're not going to see it so much in 2018. I think Ryan Day would have to pull off a miracle. I mean, if you're talking about, so let's say he's gone, no Urban Meyer. If you're able to guide this team to, I can't even say 10, I'd have to say 11 wins. Because again, this is a pencil-in playoff team, right? You've got a streak going against Michigan. You're completely dominant against the other side of the division. So logically, you're probably going to win your division and then go to Indianapolis and then be in the playoff. You have to do all of that to be considered to be a success.
Now, but what does this do for James Franklin at Penn State? Because this is his conference now, isn't it?
Next man up.
I think that had this been last year's Penn State team, this would have been a path to the national championship. I don't know about what they've lost and what they bring back in that situation. Of course, they've got a big offensive issue right now, and the fact that Joe Moorhead is ringing a cowbell in Starkville. Trace McSorley is a dynamic talent. I've known Ricky Ronnie for a long time because he was here at Vanderbilt. He's an OG Franklin guy. They are not going to try and break this. They're not going to try and change this. It reminds me, as an Atlanta Falcons fan, it reminds me painfully of watching Kyle Shanahan leave and then everyone saying, no, they're going to do the same thing. It's going to be fine. And then,
It wasn't the same thing.
It was not fine. It was Sarkisian.
Sort of the same thing with football at Vanderbilt. And the report by Adam Sparks, I don't think it surprised a lot of people that's been around that program for a long time that the academic side was interfering with the ability to build a new football stadium, even though they're receiving $40 million annually from the SEC network. Does this make it more difficult for Vanderbilt fans to really support football fully when you publicly acknowledge, essentially with your no comments in this story, that the university's not completely committed to football?
Let me start by saying I thought it was a great piece and that I find it amazing, and I'm really proud of the fact that you can still do great like investigative journalism like that and be supported even when you work for Gannett. I don't know if that's controversial to say, but I'm a Gannett alumnus, and you have to move heaven and earth to get that kind of work done now, and almost work in spite of that company to do it. So I was really excited to see that piece. I think what's telling about Adam's story is the places, it's the negative space in the story, what he wasn't able to get on the record, and who was just going to flat out deny it. Because I was shocked. I'm sure the Tennessean went to Vanderbilt and said, "Hey, this story's coming." I'm shocked they didn't get in front of it. Because so much
they don't get in front of anything.
But that's what's so different about them.
Yeah.
Because there are five people right now, five, that are dedicated to this exact situation and this problem at the University of Alabama in terms of external communications. That's the new buzzword, right? They're these like corporate trained guys who are no longer like sports information or PR flacks. They come in for messaging. That's the new word. Vanderbilt either didn't know or didn't care, but I'm leaning towards the latter. And I think that's what's more telling than even the information about the absence of financial investment. Now, to me, you're sitting on a gold mine perpetually. I've joked with Chad before. I live like half a mile from that stadium. I'm in the bag. Professional bias. I would love a 10-2 Vanderbilt team just because that means I would have a great team that I could just go and cover and go home and see my kids.
See all the SEC roll through.
There's my bias right there. Go Doors. Anchor down. They are obviously not invested in being Auburn or being Tennessee. We know that. I think the question now is, are you invested in being Northwestern? Are you invested in being North Carolina or Duke? Especially Duke is a great example, too, because Duke did not invest in their infrastructure. They did not invest in their program for a long time. They got the right coach who could balance out the academics and then still recruit a pretty good area in North Carolina and the East Coast. They don't seem to be invested in any of this, and they're sitting in what, I mean, I know we all get sick of it and we joke about the tourists and the bachelorette parties, but this is one of the most dynamic, growing,
absolutely
exciting places in America right now, and you're playing SEC football. I can't believe they're squandering this opportunity.
Stevie, this has been awesome, man. Thank you for taking the time to come in.
Thank you
for the birthday bash. Always
I got a cannoli.
Your perspective.
I was pumped. This is awesome.
Take two if you want.